Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, a healthy diet includes fresh fruits and vegetables. But what do you do if your nearest source of healthy food is 5 miles away and you don't have a car? We'll talk to a Johns Hopkins researcher about food deserts and the single biggest factor that limits access to healthy food.
But first, once upon a time, the X-ray machine was cutting-edge medical technology, but that was back in 1895. Today, there are many forms of diagnostic imaging doctors use to visualize the inside of the human body, including ultrasound, the CT scan, the MRI, the PET scan, and nuclear medicine. What's the difference between them, and when are they used?
Here to guide us through the basics of diagnostic imaging is Dr. Scott Buckingham of CRA Medical Imaging in Syracuse, New York. Dr. Buckingham is board certified in diagnostic radiology with added training in vascular and interventional radiology. Welcome to Take Care, Dr. Buckingham. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, X-rays have been around the longest, and many people have had X-rays for one reason or another, but I'm not sure that we understand exactly how a machine is able to see through our skin to our bones. Would you just describe what is an X-ray and how is that used and done?
Sure. An X-ray is really very much like a photograph. It came a little while after photography, and that's really how it was discovered. The difference is that in a photograph, it's reflected light, and in an X-ray, it's X-rays, which are a form of light that actually pass through you and expose something behind. It used to be film. In most cases, now it's digital, just like a digital camera.
How much radiation are we talking about?
There is some. It varies by the type of study and the body part. But in general, it's quite low among the spectrum of different imaging modalities that use X-ray technique. Simple, straightforward exam, chest X-rays, you know, bone films, things like that. Low dose also includes mammography.
So an X-ray can visualize, obviously can visualize bones because those are hard and dense, but how much can it see? We use it obviously in mammography, so it can see like dense tissue, but what are we talking about in terms of density? What does it spot? What does it miss?
Well, it's quite good at sorting out, as you stated, very dense tissues like bones. It becomes a little less effective at sorting out soft tissues, watery versus muscular versus fatty soft tissues, but you can often tell a bit. In mammography, there are glandular tissues and fatty tissues, and in some cases, those stand out very well. In some cases, in a woman with very dense breasts, they may not differentiate as well. One of the ways that you can help sort out things on an X-ray, and you will notice if somebody goes for an exam that they usually don't have just one picture, but they have multiple, is that you look at things from different views. So a chest X-ray, not always, but often is taken from the front and from the side, and many bone films would be taken from multiple directions. It's like looking and taking photographs of a car. If you just take it from the front, you know what it is, but you don't really know what it looks like. But if you look from various angles, you get a better idea. So that's why when you have an X-ray, you usually have more than one for that study.
I'm guessing they've reduced the amount of radiation that's needed for some of these tests, even using dental X-rays as an example. And also, there's an awareness that radiation can be harmful. Now you're wearing that big, heavy, whatever it's called. What is the...
What is that, a lead vest?
A lead apron, or at the dentist, perhaps a thyroid shield.
Yeah, now there's a thyroid shield. So how concerned should we be about the amount of radiation, let's say even a set of dental X-rays involves?
Those are generally very low, and most X-ray studies are very low. For all of the imaging modalities that use that type of technique, there's a principal ALARA, A-L-A-R-A, as low as reasonably achievable. And the goal is to have the lowest possible dose of radiation that answers the question, and that the question actually be necessary to answer. So if, for instance, 3 views of your hand or 4 views will suffice, extra views aren't taken unless they're needed. In some cases, a single view may answer the question if it's a follow-up to a prior problem. But the general goal is use as little as you can to answer the question properly and make sure that it is actually the appropriate test for the question to begin with.
All right, let's move on to the next procedure that many of us have undergone, especially when we are pregnant, the ultrasound. What's involved with the ultrasound? How does that work? And what does that best spot or identify?
Well, to begin with, an ultrasound does not use radiation. It uses sound. It's a high-frequency sound that you can't hear with your ears. but it is an echo. If you think about the typical TV image of an echo across a canyon and coming back, that transducer does the same thing. It sends out a sound, and then it's a very sophisticated listening device as well, and it knows how much of that sound came back, and based on time, how far away in your body was it. And then the system uses computers to reconstruct that into an image. And some tissues are very reflective, like bone, and some tissues or contents are not, like fluid. So the fluid in an ultrasound for a pregnant woman around the baby is pretty clear, but you can see right through the baby structures, and you can see through many soft tissues. It's also useful for things, as you know, people often get it for gallbladder. It's good at seeing the stones. It's good at seeing the fluid in the gallbladder, and it can measure tissue size, how big is your bile duct, things like that. How big are your kidneys? It's a great, simple test with very, very to non-existent risk for answering a lot of questions about soft tissues. Now, there are some things it's not helpful for because bone is so reflective. If you can't see an area through bone, if you don't have a window, if you will, to look beyond that, you can't do it. So in an adult, you can't look at, for instance, the brain with an ultrasound very easily at all. In a very young baby, before that little skull part, the fontanelle becomes firm. Everybody, the moms know about that soft spot at the top of the head. It's actually a great test for looking at brains of very young babies until you can't see through the bone. Likewise, it can't see through air. So it is less helpful at looking at things in the chest because you can't really see very well through the lung. But for other areas of normal soft tissue, it's quite good. It's also a great tool for looking at blood vessels. Many people have had venous ultrasounds or carotid ultrasounds because not only can you see the structure, but because it's real time and it's checking movement, you can see the flow in the vessel as well.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Linda Lowen.
And I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And we are talking with Dr. Scott Buckingham of CRA Medical Imaging in Syracuse about the various types of tests we encounter when we go in for something called diagnostic imaging. All right, we just discussed the ultrasound, which is basically sound waves. A lot of us do go in for CT scans. What are those? Do they involve X-ray? And what are those best for visualizing?
CT does involve X-ray. And it helps with something that we talked to or addressed earlier, the difficulty in differentiating some tissues. In a CT scanner, X-rays are passed through the body in a ring detector, and it calculates from the material that passes through, the X-rays that pass through, what the structures inside look like. The best way to think of it and compare the two is if you had, for instance, a mold of Jell-O that was a cylinder with various things inside it, if you looked at it from any direction on an X-ray, things might superimpose. You couldn't really tell one from the other. They might be hard to tell apart. But in a CT scanner, because it's scanning the whole volume, and then a computer reconstructs that information, you can look at it slice by slice by slice. It also is, because of that, much more able to differentiate similar tissues. It can tell muscle from organ. It can tell denser fluid from less dense fluid. It can easily separate out air. And it is strong enough to readily see through bone in a human. So it's great for heads, for brains, because it can see right through the skull, show the skull in detail, but also the underlying brain. It's also now, because of newer technology, a very quick exam, whereas it used to take quite a bit of time. So it's common in emergency rooms. It's common as follow-up. It's a very good test also for looking at structures in the chest and abdomen.
But if it is an X-ray and you are looking at it from all angles, is that something that is used sparingly because it's a good bit of radiation exposure?
Judiciously. It is easier and quicker to get a regular X-ray, and if that answers the question, that's often the way people would do things. But there's far more information. So, yes, the CT does, in almost all cases, have a higher radiation dose than an X-ray, but the information gained is often much more valuable, much more detailed, and in some cases simply not available from other tests.
Dr. Buckingham, do they use contrasting agents and dyes? We haven't brought that up because with X-ray and ultrasound it's not necessary. Would you explain what that is, what role it plays in general and then with a CT scan?
In CT, there are two kinds of materials that might be used. One is an oral agent to outline bowel, which you would drink generally if you're an outpatient. The other is an IV injection, and that goes into your bloodstream, and that has some iodinated material in it. The iodinated material is dense, So what it does is it helps to make areas with more blood in them denser, to outline vessels, and to make some things that might otherwise be very similar looking on a CT without the IV contrast easier to distinguish. And things where there are abnormal blood flow may become much more conspicuous that way. It's not necessary for all CTs, and the decision to use it is based on what the question is and the body part being looked at. Where it's useful, it's used, and if it's not felt to be necessary, it's often not administered because it isn't felt to help.
Okay, so then let's talk about the MRI. I don't know how many people in our listening audience have had an MRI, but those tests also every once in a while require a contrasting agent and dye. But the one thing that people do know about them who've had them is they're in a tube, they can't be wearing anything with metal, and it's incredibly loud. And it's almost like a jackhammer is next to you. And I know this is another area where they've made an attempt to make it easier on the patient by providing music in headphones or earplugs. But why don't you talk to us about an MRI, how it works, and what the patient experience is like for that?
Sure. An MRI, it's magnetic resonance imaging. It relies on magnetism. If you think about that science experiment that you might have had in elementary school where a regular nail gets wrapped up in a wire and becomes the tiniest bit magnetic itself by running current through it, indirectly it's the same thing. You're put in a very strong magnetic field, and the tiniest bit of your body aligns with that field and becomes magnetic. Nothing you can sense, nothing that can hurt you, but it is enough for this machine to use. Once you're in that state, a small amount of radio waves, basically, are sent in, different types of frequencies and different patterns, and that tiny bit of magnetized tissue responds to that, and then it returns to its prior state, and when it does so, it actually sends back a tiny amount of signal, and the antennas on the magnet pick that up. Now, as you're changing currents and sending in the radio waves and applying different patterns to the magnetic field, those electronic components are moving a little bit, enough for you to hear the popping or banging noises. So that's really what's going on with that, and that's pretty normal. There are also some machines which are open machines for certain patients that need it or there's a reason for it. They're less confining than the tubes, and honestly, many of the manufacturers now make tubes that are of shapes that feel less constricting as well. They're wider openings. They're not quite as cylindrical. They're more open on each end, and they're bigger to begin with. So that's much less of an issue for most patients now in terms of claustrophobia. The images that you get back are phenomenal. They're great for looking at soft tissues, anything with water in it, basically. The slightest difference in the tissues is clearly depicted, and you can use it to show flow, like blood flow in moving vessels. You can get exquisite detail in anatomy of muscles, neurologic tissue like the brain, abdominal organs, for instance. A great technique that's becoming more and more useful all the time. There are really a couple of issues with contrast, both for CT and MR. The contrast is excreted through your kidneys. So you will likely be asked questions that relate to your kidney function. In some cases, if there's any possibility that you might have dysfunction, you may even get lab work in advance to make sure it's safe. For the MRI, there is also the safety element that you alluded to with the metal. Now, having metal in your body is not an automatic contraindication to an MRI. People with hip or spine fusion hardware, certain other items, can have MRIs. And there's a catalog of safe, non-safe, and questionably safe devices that are referred to, and then you base the need and the availability of the service to whether you would proceed. In most cases, most devices are okay, but obviously there are a few that are not. As far as extraneous metal, yes, that would always get removed. Unnecessary metal comes off, jewelry, whatever. It can react badly in the magnet. It can be attracted by the magnet, so that all goes. But you shouldn't assume that because you have metal, you can't have an MRI. Your doctor can sort that out with the radiologist based on the specifics of any individual as to whether it's okay.
We only have about 45 seconds left, but could you just briefly go over the PET scan nuclear medicine?
Sure. Nuclear medicine also uses X-ray technique, but rather than shoot a beam of X-rays through and see what passes through, you actually take the tiniest amount of radioactive material, and it's added with some component that helps it distribute in a certain way in the body, and then the machines gather the emitted pattern of that material, and then they make a map of where it went, or the distribution out over time, and that helps answer the question that's being asked as to what physiologic process or location is collecting the material. PET scan is another nuclear test, although in most cases now it's combined with a CT or even an MR to help you precisely localize that activity rather than less precisely. So it's much more accurate now at identifying where and what the abnormal accumulation is. It's great for cancer detection, cancer surveillance. Some places use it as well for study of neurologic function and for hearts, for cardiac disease.
Dr. Scott Buckingham of CRA Medical Imaging in Syracuse, New York is our guest. Dr. Buckingham is board certified in diagnostic radiology with added training in vascular and interventional radiology. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
For more information on diagnostic imaging and Dr. Scott Buckingham, visit the Take Care webpage at wrvo.org. If you've missed a past interview or you'd like to hear one again, podcasts of our show are also available at our website and on iTunes.
Coming up, a new study reveals that access to healthy foods is influenced by an unexpected but significant factor. Find out what that is. You're listening to Take Care on WRVO Public Media.